From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Congresswoman Nikki Budzinski is in her second term, representing the 13th District in central Illinois. It was drawn to give Democrats an opportunity in an otherwise Republican part of the state, and it includes some or all of Champaign-Urbana, Decatur, Springfield, and the metro east part of Illinois near St. Louis. During the Congress's August recess, Budzinski has been back and forth across the district, culminating with a media tour that brought her to our studios Wednesday afternoon. We talked about a variety of issues, including the consequences of pending government food aid and health care cuts, Israel's war in Gaza, and dissatisfaction among some Democratic voters with their elected leaders. Because this is on tape, no calls, but we do have listener questions to ask her. Those of you in our texting group knew about this interview 2 days ago and had a chance to write or call in with a question or comment. If you would like that kind of opportunity in the future, you can join our texting group as well. You send the word TALK to 217-803-0730. Once again, send TALK, T-A-L-K, to 217-803-0730. Congresswoman Budzinski, welcome back to The 21st Show.
It's great to be with you, Brian.
So I want to start with an email we received from Lisa in Bloomington. She wrote us after actually two of our recent interviews with the Democrats running for U.S. Senate here in Illinois. But she says what she has not heard is passion and specific ideas for what Democrats will do to stop the, quote, outrageous policies being enacted by the Trump administration. So to Lisa's point, you're already in office. How do you respond to this feeling among Democratic voters that, you know, you and Senator Durbin and Speaker Jeffries and many of your colleagues are failing to meet the moment?
Well, I think we have to do more than one thing, right? I think, first of all, I've been home for almost the entire month of August visiting with constituents. I've had a number of different roundtables. And roundtables are really helpful for me to bring stakeholders together. We did just one in Champaign recently on long-term care, specifically with the Medicaid cuts. Understanding the impacts of what this Trump administration is doing, whether it's cutting SNAP, cutting Medicaid, I've been a big champion of Head Start. Hearing the real-world, real-time effects of what this is going to mean is important and is powerful, because I do take those stories with me when I'm in committee, when I'm on the floor. And that is what helps inform what I vote on as well, I will say. So that's really important in what I'm leading on. You know, and I will say also, we have tools in our toolbox as far as speaking out. I know those aren't immediately satisfying to a lot of folks, including myself. I'm frustrated and very frightened and annoyed and angry at this administration. But I think we can do things, and I continue to do things, speaking out at rallies, speaking out at protests, showing up. I know people are critical of signing on to letters and legislation. When we're in the minority, we know very well that we don't have an administration that listens to many of us with a D after our names. But it is important to be on the record as far as where we stand and where we're trying to fight back. And I've done that on a whole host of issues, whether it's fighting back. You know, this administration, just through a use of the pen, took away collective bargaining rights for workers in, at the EPA, at the VA. You know, I want to be speaking out against that. I want to speak out. And we were successful. I would, you know, I talked a moment ago about Head Start. They wanted to shut down the Head Start regional headquarters in Chicago, which services our Head Start facilities here in central Illinois. I led a letter with all of our members of the delegation to speak out against that, and they ended up taking that off the table. So I consider that success in a very difficult environment. Social Security, what they're doing with the Social Security Administration, they had actually proposed to take away the live hotline that I know seniors in my district rely on to get access to their benefits. They wanted seniors to just go online. They wanted to close potentially some of these Social Security Administration offices. We spoke out. I was immediate in speaking out against this, and the hotline has stayed open. You know, and I can tell you that matters. When I was in Alton, which is on the western side of this district, I went to a senior center, visited with seniors when this announcement had initially come out, and constituents are in tears, you know, and it is scary. And is there more that I can be doing? I want to be doing everything I can. I am committed to doing that, and try to do that every single day. It is hard in the minority. It is hard with an administration that doesn't always like to follow the rule of law in the decisions that they're making. And so I'm doing everything I can, and I'm not going to stop.
Well, okay, you mentioned it's hard in the minority. You don't have the votes. That is a fact of the matter. We did get a related question, though. John in Harvard, who says, name one thing you can point to reverse the awful reputation of Dems with likely voters.
I think I will just say, as somebody that has focused my entire career on issues that support working people, on people that are trying to struggle every day with what is in front of them, I try to do things that drive down costs, that put money back in the pocket of working people so that they can afford what I know their ultimate goal is, which is a better life for their kids. And I think it's Democrats that are committed to that, whether it is, I've talked a lot about pharmacy benefit managers. I'm giving that as one example. The PBMs, which are the middleman in determining prescription drug costs. We want to lower the cost of prescription drugs for everyone in this country. I think they're a bad actor in this. I've spoken out on creating more reform, more transparency, of the opportunity for us to bring down these costs by holding these guys accountable. I don't see this administration doing that. Democrats are leading on that. One of the bigger bills that I've been really fighting for is how do we make high-speed internet access internet affordable? We're working on it being accessible, but if it's accessible in your home but you can't afford it, we need to do that. We need to extend the affordable connectivity program, which helps people afford that. I'd like to lastly mention energy prices. Energy prices are going up throughout central Illinois. We are largely in the Ameren footprint, and I can tell you just generally, I think prices over the summer have gone up by at least 20%. One of the things the big ugly bill did was eliminate all of the tax credits for clean energy projects. And I think we've already calculated in this district that not only takes energy generation off the table, we need more energy generation to bring down costs. It also hurts and is going to cost us in central Illinois about 3,300 jobs in the clean energy sector. That's the difference. That's what Democrats are about, standing up for these issues that I believe resonate with people in their everyday lives and what the Republicans have showed consistently that they're opposed to. Tax cuts for billionaires and millionaires, they're in favor of. I'd rather make sure that health care is affordable for everyone.
Well, let me mention on that point about energy prices, we are going to be having a full discussion on that on Friday's program, so stay tuned to our listeners. But staying with domestic policy, and you mentioned the what is formally known as the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Texter in Urbana, who said, I'd like to know whether you have any specific information on how the cuts to SNAP will be applied and when. This person is a senior citizen with very low income, high expenses, living alone. They say, I'm quite dependent on the $200 in food assistance they receive each month.
Yeah, I'm going to keep speaking out against these cuts, even though I know that President Trump signed this into law. It's $187 billion of cuts to SNAP. I think that it is still to be determined exactly all of how this is going to trickle down to the states. But we know in central Illinois, well over 25,000 families benefit from SNAP every day. Let me just say, too, beneficiaries of SNAP are seniors, like perhaps this person that had a constituent from Urbana, but also working families. These are people that are working every day, but struggling with the high costs that they see at the grocery store. SNAP provides a little bit of assistance to ensure that children don't go to school hungry. And I think as one of the richest countries in the world, we shouldn't be okay with that. And so I think these SNAP cuts are no doubt going to have significant impacts on families, on seniors living on fixed incomes. That is going to hurt a lot of people. I also want to say I had the privilege in August of leader Hakeem Jeffries came to Springfield. We did a Head Start event. And part of the importance of that was making the connection. I'm a big champion of Head Start, as I've mentioned, but the connection to SNAP itself. A lot of families don't recognize or necessarily know that if they qualify for SNAP, then they also automatically qualify for Head Start. And so this is going to have a trickle-down effect beyond just increasing food insecurity in our area. It's going to mean that families are going to have to know that they have to reapply to Head Start when this was a step, a hurdle, a bureaucracy, quite frankly, that the Republicans have added that now families are going to have to do. And so when I meet with the food banks, as I've met with the food banks in Champaign and Decatur and throughout the district, The need is going up. It is not going down since COVID. And this is before we see the full effects of what this $187 billion in cuts is going to look like. So I'm going to continue to speak out against this. I think we need to be doing everything we can. And I have signed on to a number of different pieces of legislation that should we win the majority in November of 2026, which obviously I hope we do, Brian, is that these bills can become a reality and we can roll back some of these really bad components of this bill, namely SNAP cuts and Medicaid cuts.
We're speaking with Congresswoman Nikki Budzinski, represents the 13th District in Central Illinois, a Democrat in her second term in the Congress. We taped this conversation on Wednesday afternoon, so no calls today. You can always let us know what you thought. Talk at 21stshow.org is our address. How are you thinking about this Trump administration threat to potentially deploy the National Guard here in Illinois?
Yeah, look, I would say I think it's a manufactured crisis that the administration is trying to use to distract from their economic policy failures when you see tariffs leading to higher prices. And this was the promise that President Trump had made on day one. He was going to bring down costs. Costs are only going up. So is this a distraction? Yes. But what I would also say is one of the things I've tried to prioritize in the district is trying to be a good partner to local law enforcement. What this does, if he were to, you know, send in the National Guard to usurp local law enforcement efforts to address crime within a community, is just going to undermine local law enforcement and not solve any of the problems in the long term. This is a very short term, perhaps, solution to something that is going to be temporary at best.
Do you think it's a solution? Do you think sending in the National Guard?
I don't think it's a solution.
Okay.
Thank you for that clarification. I don't mean to imply that I think it is, but I think that what would be a solution is properly funding things like cop grants. And I use that as an example because my team and I have tried to go in and visit with local law enforcement throughout the district to let them know about these cop grants, the importance of them, as we want to be a partner and supportive. We know that local law enforcement right now is under-resourced and understaffed. And so cop grants can be something that helps support that. I'll tell you who has zeroed out cop grants is President Donald Trump. If he wants to really address crime, which is what he's trying to suggest he's doing by utilizing the National Guard, there are better ways to do it, which I would argue is supporting local law enforcement.
Governor Pritzker says this is really about a power grab and intimidation. I wonder where you are, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10. How worried are you that America is really and truly well on the way towards tyranny, authoritarianism, some version of what we've seen in Central and Eastern Europe?
My concerns are incredibly high. I mean, I think that you are seeing authoritarian actions being taken by this administration. You know, just recently, I read that there were some employees at FEMA that spoke out in the administration and said, look, we don't agree with what this the White House is doing. We think that what they're doing to FEMA is going to lead to us being unprepared for the next natural disaster. And what does this administration do but put those folks on leave because they spoke out? You know, you look at the weaponization of the federal government and what's happening at the DOJ, where President Trump, who was one of the biggest complainers about how the system was turned on him, he is now using the full force of the White House to go after people that he does not agree with. That is authoritarian. That is authoritarian tendencies. You look at what's happening with the Federal Reserve. I mean, this is an independent body that has operated separately from any of the politics of Washington. And you see him trying to fire one of the governors of the Federal Reserve because they're not lowering interest rates to his satisfaction. He is really tinkering. I'd say more than tinkering. He is messing with an economy, a world-class economy that, yes, could improve, could be improved upon. We could talk about those ways to improve it. But these are more authoritarian, I think, type steps. So I am very, very worried about the direction. And it's why I and that's what I will just say, Brian, that's what I hear from constituents as well. A lot of fear.
John in Chicago wants to know, if you regret your vote to override the D.C. criminal code rewrite in 2023, do you see a connection between that and the recent federal takeover of D.C.?
Look, I think that President Donald Trump is going to do whatever he wants to do. I don't think he's necessarily waiting for the green light from Congress before he acts. He's made that very clear. He's beating to his own drum. I will say I am someone that very much believes in statehood for the District of Columbia. I think they should be their own state. I think what is happening within the district is alarming. I just read today that the president has a plan to now reinstate the death penalty for anyone that has a murder conviction. That's the first time that was overturned in the District of Columbia over 50 years ago. They have now taken over Union Station, the Department of Transportation. I mean, this is very scary. And so I think they should be a state. I think in order for that to happen, we're going to have other people like Democrats like myself that agree with that, make that happen.
I'm going to press pause here in our conversation with Congresswoman Nikki Budzinski. We taped this Wednesday afternoon. We need to take a short break. After that, we'll have more of your questions for her, including on Israel and Palestine and on potential challengers in the Democratic primary election next year. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Let's get right back to my interview with Congresswoman Nikki Budzinski, recorded midday Wednesday at our studios in Urbana. We got a number of questions for you about Israel's war in Gaza. Some of them were pretty tough, but you know, this is how some number of your constituents really feel. So we actually have some voicemails. Let's take a listen to that.
Hi, my name's Amina. I'm calling from Springfield.
Hello, this is Lila from Urbana.
Hey, this is Dua from Champaign.
I'd like to ask Congresswoman Budzinski why she continues to vote to fund the war in Israel.
But I am curious when Nikki Budzinski will consider stopping her support of a genocide in Palestine.
And I am just curious as to how much Palestinian loss and death will be enough to satiate Representative Budzinski's Palestinian bloodlust. Thanks.
Well, let me just say the last part is offensive. I mean, I'll just be honest. Like, I see what's happening in Gaza. I see the children that are starving. I saw that the World Health Organization has now officially called it a famine. I have taken steps to use my office to say we need to be flooding humanitarian aid into Gaza. I have been critical of Netanyahu. I think he is using this war to his own self-service and leading to the needless deaths of a lot of innocent civilian life. And I just recently this week also signed on with some of my colleagues to urge the administration to specifically prioritize baby formula for children. And the second I, you know, signed on to an effort to say to the State Department, for children that are not receiving the medical care that they need within Gaza, which we just saw, I saw as well, that a hospital, another hospital had been bombed, that they, those children be able to get medical care in the United States if they're not able to receive that in Gaza. I think there are very valid questions to be asked about additional you know, weapons to Israel. I do believe that Israel has a right to defend itself, and I do support that. They are the only democracy within the Middle East. In the Middle East, when you take into account Hezbollah, the Houthis, Iran, you know, is a very, very dangerous place. And so I guess, you know, what I would say is, you know, I am continuing to stay on top of this situation and do everything I can to urge more humanitarian aid into the region and to reach peace. I don't believe that eradicating Hamas, which we do need to do, is going to be done through the starvation of children.
Is that a reasonable end goal here, eradicating a terrorist idea almost in Gaza?
Well, I would say I don't think Israel is helping itself when you're starving children within Gaza. In some ways, I have no doubt you could be radicalizing people that for generations to come are going to continue to perpetuate a very dangerous war and make it even more, costly in human life. And so it sounds, I very much, and even before October 7th, have been a very big supporter of the two-state solution. I know for a lot of folks that can understandably feel very far away, but I think that is the North Star that we should always be continuing to strive for to reach a sustained peace.
According to the campaign finance website Open Secrets, you received more than $160,000 from pro-Israel groups, including AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, and J Street. That's more money than your colleagues, Republican colleagues, Representative Mary Miller, Representative Mike Bost. I think, some people hear that and they think maybe you're willing to, trade suffering in Gaza to avoid a primary challenge. What do you say to that?
Absolutely not. Yeah, absolutely not. I mean, I vote my constituents. I vote what I believe to be is in support of the communities that I represent. I do the best I can to inform myself on all sides of an issue. Certainly, there have been a number of very difficult votes that we've taken in the 3 years that I've been in the House, and I weigh them very heavily, the pros and the cons of all sides. And I try to meet with constituents as well, even when we disagree. I mean, Dua, who was one of the folks that called in, I've met with Dua. I've met with the protesters within Urbana-Champaign to hear them out, because I think that everybody should be heard. And that's my job. And even when we disagree, I think it's important to still hear everybody out. And so I do try to do that with every issue.
That gets to this idea with it. One of the problems we have now in America is that people think an increasing number of issues are beyond debate, right? How do you approach that? I think this is one, right? There's definitely multiple, there's way more than two narratives of what's happening in Israel and in Palestine and Gaza. How do you navigate that when you're still trying to represent this broad swath of people in central Illinois?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Brian, and it is ever evolving. And sometimes two things can be true at the same time, and it's difficult. I think as you've seen this situation since October 7th, happen, this situation in the Middle East has evolved. I mean, we saw the president get involved with Iran. We saw Israel go into Syria. These were things that no one would have ever necessarily expected, or I can say I certainly didn't after October 7th. And we are, of course, still working and fighting to try to get the remaining hostages home that were abducted, viciously abducted on October 7th. And so this continues to be a very challenging, heartbreaking, horrific situation that's evolving. And as continued new issues continue to arise within Congress, I'm going to weigh them all.
Do you think America should still seek to be a global superpower? That's an idea that seems to be falling out of favor with a lot of people.
I think the United States is a beacon of hope. It should be a beacon of hope for all countries, for everyone around the world, as the standard, the gold standard of a democracy. And I think in these last 6 months, some of the more painful things is the kind of inward looking, our removal by this administration of our footprint in peacekeeping. I mean, one of the things that weighs on me is, the evacuation of Afghanistan. We had promised some of the Afghans that we would give them refuge because they helped us. We've reneged on that commitment to those Afghans, and we are no longer welcoming them into the United States, even though they helped us at a time when we needed their help. We look at what happened at USAID and the elimination of a very good friend that worked there and the great work that they were doing around the world for a very small fraction of what is our overall total budget to create some goodwill. My concern, Brian, is that other bad actors are filling that void, and I mean namely China. when you look at countries like, or continents like Africa, and Brazil, Argentina, China is investing internationally. They are investing for reasons. They are investing to build relationships in the longer term, and our withdrawal from those kind of humanitarian, more goodwill type of issues, the soft power, if you will, to build the relationships with other countries that are aligned with us in the world. I really worry long term what that's going to mean for our country and who in turn then is going to fill that vacuum.
We're coming to the end of our time together. I do want to share one more voicemail. We got a couple of questions along this line from listeners.
Hi, my name is Jessica. I'm calling from Urbana, Illinois. I was just wanting to know if he is going to do a debate with the other members who are going against her. I believe it's Dylan Blaha and Emily Lux. Yeah, I think those are it. Because I think we, the people, deserve to hear where everyone stands on during this election and what they're going to do for us as constituents. Thank you so much.
So I know there's at least two Republicans I've talked to who are looking forward to challenge. Well, one of them in November, but even before that, we're talking about the primary. What do you think? Debate?
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about the issues anytime.
You would do a debate with them?
I would be happy to talk about the issues anytime.
I feel like that's not quite answering. What about the gamesmanship, that established candidates often use to squelch opposition, right? Getting people kicked off the ballot on signature requirements or something like that. I mean, do you support that kind of thing? Are you okay with that? Do you think that's just fair?
Well, look, I think that there are requirements for qualifying for the ballot, and we should all follow the rules. I certainly have to follow the rules. So I would say any candidate that's serious about running should have to do the same.
All right. I'll leave listeners to make up their own minds about that. Congresswoman Nikki Budzinski, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.